When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hi, this is Chris. This is going to be an encore presentation of Amateur Traveler because I'm off celebrating a family birthday. But I think you'll enjoy this episode from 2019.
I got my bags packed.
Amateur Traveler, episode 684. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about museums and memorials and markets, parks, palaces, and a wall as we go to Berlin, Germany. Welcome to Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Berlin. I'd like to welcome to the show Audrey Scott and Daniel Knoll from UncorneredMarket.com, or welcome back to the show, I should say. And we brought Audrey and Daniel back to talk about Berlin, Germany. Audrey and Daniel, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us again.
Yeah, great to be back.
And I say welcome back to the show, but I don't know if I could come up with all the times you've been on the show. We've certainly done wonderful episodes together on Prague. And Bangladesh are the two that really stand out for me. I think there may be some other ones, and there's certainly some This Week in Travels in there also. But I'll put a list of all the shows they have been on in the show notes, so we don't have to waste time with that. But we have not covered Berlin, Germany in quite a long time. I was really surprised how long it had been, more than a decade, since we've talked about a rather rapidly changing city. Berlin has changed a lot since we covered it the first time on the show, for sure. And you guys happen to live there now.
Yeah, we've actually called Berlin our home now for about 7 years. It's hard to believe. And even within that time, it's changed quite a lot. So if we go back over a decade, yeah, there's been a lot of changes.
Well, and so this seemed like a really good excuse to have two of my favorite guests back on the show. Why should someone think about going to Berlin?
Well, it certainly seems to be enjoying another upsurge in popularity. Correct me if I'm wrong. On the statistics, I think it's the third most popular destination in Europe.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Berlin, on the surface, is not a traditional European destination, meaning it doesn't have a preserved old town like Prague,
right,
or even like Munich, or even like many of the other incredible cities in Europe. But what it has is it has this dynamism and feel to it and creativity and energy. And so people don't really come to Berlin to see beautiful old buildings. There are still a few that remain, and there's obviously a really interesting history here, but it's more for its creative feel, for its neighborhoods, for there's also has a really big party scene for those who like clubbing. It's more about the feel of the place.
Well, and then I think the other two most popular cities then would be London and Paris, I believe you're talking about. And compared to the two of them, it's also had a reputation for being less expensive, although I don't know if that's still true.
I think to a great degree it is. Having just visited London, I think we can vouch for that.
Well, yeah, London.
Right.
Still a great city, but yeah.
So yeah, certainly your dollar or euro or whatever you happen to be carrying goes a little bit further. And I think it's just a different city, bridging from what Audrey had said before. I think when people come away, they're struck with the difficulty to articulate why Berlin sticks with them in the way that it does. And the word they often use is vibe. I love the vibe of that city. It's such an interesting vibe, that the atmosphere. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Berlin is in this sort of constant state of flux, and perhaps in a constant state of renaissance and reimagining itself.
Well, and you mentioned a constant state of flux. So the first time I was in Berlin, and we've talked about this on the show, was a year after the wall fell. And the heart of the city, the center of the activity, was Kurfürstendamm on the western side. And you could still see the bullet holes in the walls on what was East Germany. You could hardly find any trace of the wall, but you didn't need it to tell what had been East Germany. It was still fairly drab on that side of, in a lot of the buildings and things. I think the last time I was back, it had completely flipped. The vibrant activity was where it traditionally was in the eastern part of the city. But I understand that that continues to change since I have been there.
Yeah, I mean, the city is constantly changing. And Berlin is a very neighborhood-focused city. And so the neighborhoods are always experiencing different levels of renaissance, and also when they're hip, when they're not hip. But for, especially after the wall fell, East Berlin, what was formerly East Berlin, was the hub for artists. And the mayor actually was rather smart. He said, well, we have all these really big industrial buildings. We have all this space.
Right.
And he actually opened it up for artists, for basically like squatter communities and art studios and stuff. And so that attracted a lot of artists and creative types to the city. And so you still feel that today, but some of the traditional areas where that was, like in Mitte, has now become a bit too expensive, a little bit too gentrified. So now those artist communities are going a little bit more, let's say, towards the edges where there still is available space.
Well, and Mitte would be middle, so literally the middle of the city.
Yeah, it's the middle of the city, but it was the heart of former East Berlin. And all the neighborhoods have changed quite a bit. Like, we live in Neukölln in the south, and our neighborhood, we talked to Berliners who grew up here in their 30s, 40s, and they were saying, you know, when I was young, you never went there. Like, that was considered a bad place to go. Someone joked it was like the Harlem, like in the bad days. But now it's a vibrant community, and we've got museums and galleries, but also it still has this connection to its roots, which is a worker community, as well as an immigrant community. So it's this interesting dynamic between a little bit of gentrification, which is a big issue in Berlin right now, but it still has its soul in terms of kind of a working man or everyday neighborhood as well.
Excellent. Well, let's start to put some structure on this. What kind of itinerary would you recommend for someone who's coming to Berlin, especially for the first time?
Okay, well, that really depends on the number of days that person had.
Well, let's target about a week for Berlin and day trips from Berlin.
I think the first piece of advice that we might give to someone is to understand that Berlin is, I believe, approximately 360 square miles in terms of landmass. So you're not going to be able to cover the entire city. So I think the trick is to figure out what are the core elements that you'd like to see in Berlin, east and west. And then maybe to identify a couple of the non-core that are out there in some of the neighborhoods. So in terms of some of the usual suspects, you know, you're looking at things like Checkpoint Charlie and the Checkpoint Charlie Museum, which definitely, although it is touristy, it's something that we often recommend to people, particularly on those days that are not good weather days.
Yeah, the museum, actual Checkpoint Charlie, it's rather touristy and people are posing for photos. But the museum is actually, it's a private initiative and it has all sorts of stories and photos of life when the wall was up, as well as stories of escape. And it's quite well done.
Well, and let's dig into that a little more. So Checkpoint Charlie, one of the famous checkpoints between East and West Berlin. There's the little guardhouse there, which is a reconstruction because they tore down the guardhouse very quickly after they tore down the wall and then realized, oh, hey, we have this wonderful, memorable spot. So they built it back up again. But the Checkpoint Charlie Museum was there during the time of the wall. And it started as a private collection of memorabilia about escapes predominantly from Berlin. And I think it's a fascinating museum, although I would have to say the last time I was there, it had a feel of grandma's attic in terms of organization. I don't know if that has changed.
I don't think so.
Okay. One of the most amazing and wonderful collections, so hazardly arranged, but you can see where someone took a surfboard and hollowed it out so they could put people inside, or cars with secret compartments, or people who made balloons to fly over the wall. I mean, it's a fascinating collection, especially in terms of Cold War history.
It does a nice job of addressing Cold War history from the standpoint of Berlin, but it also digs into some of the Cold War history elsewhere. So the Velvet Revolution in Prague, and also the uprising in Hungary. So it provides a broader context, not just what happened here in Berlin, which I think is really, really nice.
Not quite as my favorite in terms of organization as the Museum of Communism in Prague, but still an amazing and great museum.
And to be honest, the fact that it is a private collection does mean that it's a bit eclectic and not as well organized, but it also feels, in terms of the care that someone took in collecting everything. In terms of other Berlin Wall sites to visit, there's the East Side Gallery,
right,
which is along the Spree River in Friedrichshain neighborhood. And that's 2 kilometers or over 2 kilometers of the Berlin Wall, and it's been turned into an outside art gallery. So as I understand, I think it's the longest outside art gallery set of murals in the world. And it has a lot of the segments are fixed, meaning they've been there for 10, some of them 20, 25 years. But some of those segments are actually painted over and from time to time. So it's kind of a fun walk to do.
And mostly politically themed art about the wall is what I recall from the last time I was there. Still true?
Yeah, there's quite a bit connected to the wall, and then also now quite a bit connected to the environment of the climate crisis. So that's some of the newer street art that's been going up.
And it has been under somewhat threat of being torn down for redevelopment.
Right.
Yes, that happens every couple of years. I think actually that section along the river is a bit controversial because the city, and to be honest, Berlin, even though it has so many visitors and it's the capital of Germany, it's basically bankrupt. So in terms of trying to earn money, was trying to sell basically rights for housing and business development there. And actually, the last time that happened, there were quite a lot of demonstrations and petitions, and they managed to keep the housing, I forget whether it was housing or business development company, from removing the East Side Gallery and taking it somewhere else. So it still remains there, but that's a contested area because it's prime real estate, but it's protected right now because of the East Side Gallery.
Where else should we see?
I would also say to visit the Brandenburg Gate, which is kind of the iconic, it actually used to be one of the original gates to the city of Berlin when it was a walled city. And next door to that is the Reichstag, which is kind of the German parliament. One thing with that is now you have to, it's free to go up there. You can go up to the dome and they have a nice audio tour that you can pick up, but you have to reserve that in advance. So you have to go to the website and pick a time and a place. And the reason why I say that is a few years ago, you could just walk up there with your passport and you could go up, but now they actually have specific times reserved in advance. Now, another way to get around that, if you really want to go up there, because it does provide really nice views of the city, is there's also a cafe on the top of the parliament.
Oh, that I did not know. Okay.
Yeah, so it's also possible to make a reservation there for breakfast or coffee or lunch, and that way you get around the lines and can go up to the top as well.
And besides the sweeping views of the city that the Reichstag has, the staircase as it winds its way up to the top of the Reichstag is really beautiful. So it's a beautifully designed building. And then on top of that, the sort of audio guide interpretation is really excellent and well done. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those things when people will tell people about it and then they'll say, oh, I wasn't able to get a reservation. And it's really unfortunate. So that's one thing to look into in advance of, mm-hmm. of your visit is getting a reservation there.
Well, and if people are picturing the old pictures of what the building looked like, it's changed quite a lot.
Yes.
And there's one significance that we haven't mentioned in terms of the Reichstag's new dome.
It's glass.
Okay. And, and what can you see?
I was going to say that it's also all mirrors on the inside. Now I'm beginning to run through my head thinking.
Yeah, so you can actually look down on the German parliament. And the architect's idea was that coming out of World War II and coming out of the reunification, that this basically was an idea that the parliament is transparent. And so they did this in a very intentional statement of transparency. Fascinating, beautiful architecture in this old restored building. Obviously, it was quite heavily damaged. It was some of the last fighting in World War II happened here on the steps of the Reichstag, but it is now been transformed into a symbol of the new Germany, I think.
And the audio guide gives that whole entire background, but also just walking around there, one of the things that I love is how open that area is.
Right.
For example, Berlin Marathon ends very close to there, and so everyone is hanging out on the lawn of the Reichstag after the marathon, and so it's a really... In addition to the transparency that you mentioned, it also just feels like the Reichstag is it's a very open area, meaning there's not fences and guards keeping you away from the lawn in front of it. So it feels very much connected to the people, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. While we're in that area, I think there's a couple other things we want to direct people to see. What else should we do while we're in that center part of town?
Certainly the Holocaust Memorial, which is probably fairly famous, you know, not too far from the Brandenburg Gate. You'll have an opportunity to see that. Tiergarten, which is one of Berlin's largest parks. I think that's actually a worthwhile place to take a stroll through. There are a couple of monuments there as well, including...
including a Soviet monument that always fascinated us because it's a Soviet war memorial, but it was always in West Berlin. And apparently they would allow the guards every morning to come through, change of the Soviet guards every morning when the wall was divided. And so there you have the big statue of a Soviet soldier and a tank. But what's interesting is if you go back a little bit on the side panels, they have big black and white photos of Berlin after World War II. So you can, a lot of them are aerial photos. So you can see what the city was like after World War II, a lot of the destruction.
As in flat.
Yeah. The photos of the Reichstag that you mentioned. And so it also, that provides perspective of how much the city was destroyed and how much has been rebuilt. And it's gone through this process a few times already. So that's another place to visit.
Well, and you mentioned Holocaust Memorial. I think you're talking about the Memorial to the Murdered Jews of Europe, I think is the official name of it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people know what we're talking about, but I don't want to assume that everybody does. Because it's a very interesting and odd monument in terms of what it looks like. It's a series of obelisks, would that be the right term, of various heights that I think is meant to remind you of the old Jewish cemeteries, like you'd find, for instance, in old Prague, where you also used to live.
Yeah.
But they're starting at sort of knee height, and then you go down into some of the canyons, even in here, and they're towering above your head, but they represent many of the people. I don't remember how many people per monument, but I think there's some math there in terms of trying to represent the 6 million Jews who were killed in World War II. It's a sobering, but I think a beautiful monument.
And what I've also heard is that, as you mentioned, you know, as you go through it, the obelisks or the blocks are different sizes, and also the ground is uneven.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
And what we were told also is that it's also meant to make you feel disoriented, which again is this idea of the world and life is shifting, and this idea of feeling disoriented as you go through it as well.
I remember we did a walking tour, one of the free walking tours that's available right there, starting at the Starbucks near the Brandenburg Gate.
Yes.
Right, as everyone probably should do.
Yeah.
Available.
It was very good. And it was not free for us. We tipped heavily because it was worth it. It was a 3-hour walking tour. But one of the things that they were noting is right near there is the spot where the bunker, Hitler's bunker, was. And last I was there was no marker at all. So they really wanted you to remember this part, but they didn't want to commemorate and have it be a place where Nazis or neo-Nazis would congregate or lay wreaths for certain or things like that. So that's a parking lot.
Right. And in fact, I honestly deliberately did not include that in this discussion for that reason. It's fair to bring it up. Right. During on walking tours, typically it'll be brought up. But it's something that's, for various obvious reasons, is fairly hush-hush and moved along fairly quickly.
Well, and especially because that would have been in East Germany. And so we talk about the 6 million murdered Jews of Europe, but the Soviet Union lost even more people than that in the Great Patriotic War, I think is what they call it. And so, yeah, there was no way when it was East Germany, there was going to be anything that looked at all like a monument to Hitler or any of that part of the history. So very intentionally not there. No plaque, no nothing.
And I do think that now a sign has been put up.
I was wondering if they had, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was one of the underground company that focuses on underground tours. And I think they managed to get a sign up, but it's very much informational and historical as opposed to a memorial. And it's very small and you kind of have to look for it. But yeah, that's deliberate to not make that a big site. You mentioned the free walking tour. There's quite a few free walking tours that start at the Starbucks near Brandenburg Gate every day. But also another walking tour that's great is the Alternative Berlin Tour. And that focuses more on Kreuzberg and Friedrichshain.
Okay.
And it talks about the street art history and culture in Berlin and takes you past a lot of the big murals, as well as provides background on tagging and different types of street art and the street art groups and the different types of artists. And usually it's led by someone who is a street artist themselves. So they know some of the different artists who are around. And it also talks about Berlin's alternative culture. You know, that it still has a tradition of squatter houses of artists and community homes and things like that. And that, I think, is usually they meet at Alexanderplatz, I think at 11 and 1 o'clock.
Okay.
But it's the alternative Berlin tour. And it's fun as well. And you can do a paid version where after the tour, you go to a typical old Berlin factory. I think it used to be a bread factory. And you can make your own stencils and street art and play with the cans of paint.
But they do not let you climb on the buildings.
Yes.
Strangely enough. Well, in Kreuzberg being another neighborhood in the south, which was a working class neighborhood traditionally, and then became more of an immigrant neighborhood, would that be fair to say? And a lot of countercultural and things like that in that neighborhood, like the neighborhood you were mentioning where you were living. I've done a tour of Kreuzberg with Context Travel. I had a wonderful tour down there, again, looking at that. And it was actually from somebody who had worked with a redevelopment agency in Kreuzberg, because Context tends to have experts on their tours. And you talked about redevelopment and gentrification being a somewhat of a controversial issue there. And she had lived through that, because anytime you would do any redevelopment there, people would sometimes tear it down in the sense that they didn't want the area to gentrify and the rents to go up and people have to move and things like that.
And that's still happening.
Yeah.
It's happening in our neighborhood, in the neighborhood that we are in, which is on the edge of Tempelhof Airport, which we'll get to at some point. But getting back to Kreuzberg, this is actually one of the reasons why we recommend actually both of those tours. I imagine the Context tour that you spoke of, we might have even had the same guy.
Yeah, we actually.
And that is a worthwhile tour, because not only does it cover a neighborhood that's well worth seeing, Kreuzberg, and I guess an edge maybe of Friedrichshain, but I think it may stay in the west, but it actually dives pretty deep into the role of the courtyards, deliberate construction of the buildings throughout, certainly in Kreuzberg, but much of Berlin, the role of factories and the way that buildings were organized around those factories and the sort of plans for Berlin before it ultimately ended up being destroyed. And it's also important to note, too, for your listeners, that Kreuzberg is part of West Berlin. Mm-hmm. And the reason that places like Kreuzberg and Neukölln, where we live, became immigrant communities is because after the war, there was a guest worker program where folks from Turkey were invited over to basically help rebuild Berlin. Well, of course, many of them enjoyed what they saw here, ended up staying. And so there are enclaves of Turkish Germans. Actually, some of the Turkish Germans themselves will even joke that it's...
Kreuzberg is more Turkish than Istanbul.
Well, you can certainly find good Turkish food in Berlin, and we'll get to food eventually, but that's one of the reasons, obviously.
Yeah, great food and spices.
And similarly, I guess in the east, you'll find a lot of Vietnamese German enclaves.
Sure.
And again, something similar was at work there. There were educational exchange programs because Vietnam was communist.
North Vietnam, right? Exactly.
North Vietnam was communist and East Germany was communist. And so there were educational exchanges and many of those folks stayed. And of course, they put their fingerprint onto the thankfully evolving culinary scene here in Berlin.
Excellent. Where else should we see?
We touched on this briefly, but we'll go a little bit more deeper in terms of Tempelhof Airport. It was an airport until 2008, I think. Now it's closed and it's a public park and it's huge. It's, I think, 100 acres bigger than Central Park in New York. And they've managed to fight off development. So it's still in its original state and you can rent bicycles or ride bicycles and go down the runway. And it's a hard place to explain. It's a really open space, but it has a really special feel to it. And in terms of history, it was the site of the Berlin Airlift, where Allied troops, American, British, mainly American and British troops, brought supplies into West Berlin because the Soviets had put a barricade, basically had prevented goods to come in and out of West Berlin. So this was the lifeline. And I think the statistic is something like plane was landing every 30 seconds at Tempelhof during that time, bringing in food, medicine, supplies, everything.
So it was 48 to 49.
One of the great things, we live a few blocks from Tempelhof, so we're a bit biased, but the neighborhood around there has been changing quite a lot in the last few years. So now you can find Ethiopian restaurants and cafes, and I think there's even an Iranian restaurant and Sudanese restaurant. So the area around there is also quite nice in terms of walking around, getting a coffee, and enjoying the tree-lined streets and the boulevards. And I also had mentioned renting a bicycle. That's also one of our top tips for Berlin, is to rent a bike, or now there's actually bike share. There's, I think, 10 different bike share programs now in Berlin, of grabbing a bike and exploring the city that way. Because as Dan mentioned, the city is huge.
Also relatively flat. Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Very flat, which means that it's easy to ride around. And a lot of areas do have bicycle lanes. So it also makes it pleasant to ride through the different neighborhoods and explore different areas.
And while we understand that people might be concerned or they might feel like it's unsafe, the bike lanes here are wonderful. Bicyclists, for the most part, are respected. It's a great way to get around. It's a great way to cover some ground. There are even tours of fragments of the Berlin Wall on bicycle, run by Berlin on Bikes. We've also done those. Those are a great way to see sort of further afield bits of the wall in the east and northeast. So there's that, and then accessing places like Tempelhof and getting on those old runways with a bicycle is really fabulous. I mean, it's a great experience in and of itself. And then if you have a particularly nice day and there's a little bit of wind, you will find people on all manner of air-powered vehicles.
And kites and skyboarding and things.
Skyboarding?
Is it kiteboarding?
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of airports...
Oh, do we have to go there?
We just have to bring it up. Berlin still doesn't have the new airport open, correct?
No.
That's
okay,
correct.
We're recording this in 2019. I think it's scheduled to open in 2010 or something like that.
2012, I think.
Okay.
And then the latest is it's supposed to be September 2020, but we've heard this before. So
okay. I think all the good money is on that airport not opening. So we're left with Tegel, which was a donut that's been extended and extended and extended again over its lifetime. A donut built in 90 days, if I understand correctly. I hope I have my...
As an emergency airport,
which is now the main airport in the city. And then we have Schönefeld in the southeast, which is perennially voted the worst airport in the world. And people still come to Berlin.
But if you're listening sometime further in the future, perhaps you will arrive at a brand new, spanking new, wonderful airport, but not yet.
And until the airport does open, you can actually take bicycle tours of the non-opened airport.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. In the summertime, there's, I think every Saturday and Sunday, they have bicycle tours where you ride along the runway and then they take you inside the terminal building. And it's supposedly beautiful on the inside, but hopefully we'll see it one day in use.
Do you have any other interesting, quirky tours for us? We've named a few already, but we might as well fit more in here if you've got some.
Another interesting tour is there's an underground tour in the north that takes you into an U-Bahn station that was used.
Was it Gesundbrunnen?
I think maybe it was Gesundbrunnen, and it was used as a bunker during World War II. And so they take you into the bunker areas and separated from men and women and children. And that's also quite an interesting tour. And I think the company is called Underground Berlin.
Well, then just for those whose German is rusty, U-Bahn literally under train. And so that's the subway in Germany, in Berlin.
Correct.
Although in some areas, the U-Bahn is actually above ground because Berlin is built kind of on sand and it has very high water levels. And so they weren't able to build it underground in some areas. So it's a bit confusing because you have the U-Bahn and then you have the S-Bahn, and Berlin public transportation system is wonderful. So that's another good way to get around and see a lot because the city is so big.
And the S-Bahn is the above ground trains or the trolley cars?
Technically, they're the above ground trains, right? Or trolley cars are technically called the metro. The M. So you have the U, which is supposed to be underground, but is often above ground. You have the S, which is the Straßenbahn, which sometimes is on the street and sometimes is not. And then you have the metro, which is not underground at all.
It's a tram.
And other than that, the only thing I can think to tell people is make sure you take your ticket to the ticket validation machine, because they don't check all the time, but when they do, there's some hefty fines that I've had some friends who have had to pay.
Right.
It's hefty fines, and it's also just a really unpleasant experience. So usually there's yellow boxes at the U-Bahn. So stick your ticket in there to validate. And at the S-Bahn, they're usually red. And actually, if you're going to spend a week in Berlin, probably the easiest thing is just to get a week-long transport ticket. So that way you don't have to worry about validating your ticket every time you get on.
And you'll use it. Yeah. Because just because the distances are so great. It's not that it's a great city to walk short distances, mm-hmm. but you're going to be on public transport quite a lot. Unless, of course, you spend the entire time on bike.
So in terms of other quick tour, unusual tour that came to mind, you can also take canoe tours or kayaking tours.
What?
And that can also be quite interesting. Berlin has, a lot of people don't realize how much water there is in Berlin. There's mm-hmm. rivers, there's canals. And
I think there's technically more bridges in Berlin than in Venice. One of these statistics that
yeah. Because it's a lot larger.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, of course.
And so you can also take canoe or kayaking tours in different areas as well, which can be fun.
And it's the river Spree that runs through Berlin right behind the Reichstag?
Yes, that's correct.
So, right, in English, the Spree, or in auf Deutsch, the Spree.
Spree, yeah. That's right. Okay.
Right. So there's, yeah, canoeing is excellent. And even if you don't necessarily even do a canoe tour per se, even renting kayaks, if the weather is particularly nice, and heading in the direction of Kreuzberg to the Landwehr Canal, you'll know that you're on the Landwehr Canal if you end up going to one of the other recommendations we'd make is the Maybach Ufer Market, which is held Tuesdays and Fridays from noon till 6 p.m. That's in Kreuzberg. That's a great place to go people watching.
It's traditionally a Turkish market, but now it still has fruits and vegetables and Turkish delis. But now you can also find kind of some handicrafts as well as spice shops and a lot. It's grown in the last couple of years.
I once got my hair cut there.
It also usually has street professionals, if you want to call it that, and also musicians as well.
I don't want to ask more questions about street professionals, do I? Okay. With the river, that's the other thing I think that has changed. If you were in Berlin 15, 20 years ago, it was largely ignored by the city. There wasn't a lot that was happening on the river, but in the summertime, that's really different now.
There's actually even a swimming pool that's been built into the river now on the, I think it's technically in Kreuzberg, on the Kreuzberg side.
Kreuzberg or Friedrichshain.
Well, it's between the two. So you can actually go swimming in a swimming pool, but like you're right on the river. And then they also rent paddle boats. And there's a lot more happening on the river nowadays. Also in the summertime, it's not that Berlin gets that hot, but people love going either to the river or going to the lakes and going swimming. So you'll see a lot of people out in parks. You'll notice people having picnics by the river.
Well, sand beaches and riverfront bars and a lot more happening on the river than used to be.
Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent. Where else should we go?
If you're looking for a day trip out to Potsdam, might not be a bad idea. A cute little town. You've got the Schloss.
The castle. Or palace, I guess.
The palace out at Potsdam.
And the gardens are really beautiful around there as well.
Sans souci. So what we're talking about here is Berlin is the old imperial Prussian city, but Potsdam is where the emperor lived. And so you've got multiple palaces out there. The first time I went there was, again, the first year after the wall fell, and the brochure for it was written by East Germans. So it was about the imperialist decadence and things like that. That's probably not the same brochure you'll get now.
No.
But it's also probably in a lot better shape. It had really been left to rot a lot, unfortunately, under the East German care. But a beautiful, beautiful area.
Yeah, and the palace has been renovated and sparkling and shiny, and it's beautiful now. Actually, one of the lakes is near there, so it's also nice if you have extra time to go down to the lake, and there's actually some beer gardens along the lake as well.
As there should be, yeah.
There are also segments of the lake that were divided by the wall, those cut into sort of east and west. And for anyone who's a history buff, Potsdam was also the site of the Potsdam Agreement or Potsdam Treaty, I forget which one. And it was between the Allies, so Kingdom, United States, and Soviet Union, regarding the military occupation and reconstruction of Berlin.
and who got what piece.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And yeah, divided the country as well as the city.
Yeah, well, the city was divided into four pieces. We think of it being divided into two pieces, but it was divided into the British, the U.S., and the French sectors, which all became West Berlin, as well as the country was divided in the same fashion.
One of the things that people don't realize when they think about West Berlin and also the wall is that the wall actually went around West Berlin.
Right.
It was West Berlin that was encircled, that was surrounded by a wall. It was not the East, per se.
Yeah.
Which I think is something that most people get sort of reversed in their mind when they think about the city.
And we actually just celebrated here in Berlin the 30th anniversary of the fall of the wall.
Yeah.
That was a fun weekend and a lot going on in the city to celebrate that.
Well, and my understanding is that you can now tell where the wall had been. It's more marked on the ground. Again, when I was there right after, it was gone and you couldn't tell where it used to be except by the gaps. But a lot of it is now marked on the ground with, I want to say, brass dots or something like that.
Yeah, bricks in the ground. And then also there's signs that say Mauerweg.
Okay.
And it kind of shows street corners and stuff, like there's a turn and it shows the path of the Mauerweg, means wall path. And we actually cycled the entire Berlin Wall earlier this year.
Yeah.
So 160 kilometers, about 100 miles in one day.
Oof.
Yeah, it's great though. Fascinating.
We don't recommend that unless you happen to be an enthusiast, but it definitely takes you to everywhere you might imagine in Berlin, from the most rural, and I think that's the surprising thing about this city, is there are actually rural segments of it, to the most urban. It really is diverse, more diverse than we think.
Excellent. Anything else we want to see in the city? Any other neighborhoods you would recommend?
Mitte, which we already mentioned, technically means the middle. And in Mitte, there's also the Museum Island.
Oh, sure.
UNESCO site, and has the Pergamon and several other museums that it's worth getting a museum card if you're going to be here for a few days, just so that way you can go in and out of the different museums freely.
If you have kids, there's the DDR Museum, all sorts of old East German artifacts and housewares and fun stuff that you can interact
everyday
with.
Everyday life sort of thing.
Everyday life.
Yeah, like a sample apartment and Trabant and things like that.
If antiquities and playing with grandma's old telephone isn't for you, Mitte is also home to a lot of galleries. So gallery art, if that's your thing, you can walk the streets of, there's a sort of a segment of Mitte, you'll see it on the map, and there's one gallery after another.
Like Auguststrasse is one of the streets.
Auguststrasse, Linienstrasse, and in and around that area, a lot of little private galleries that are worth checking out.
And those originally, probably when you first visited, those were art studios or let's say squatter communities. But over time, they've been turned into proper modern art galleries as well.
You kind of undersold the Museum Island there a little bit. But for if you are a museum goer, if you are a history buff, that I would definitely recommend, especially the Pergamum Museum, where you can walk through the gates, the reconstructed gates of Babylon, for instance. And I feel like that alone is worth a stop if, again, if you're a history buff, if that's something you like, walk through the Ishtar Gate there. I'll put a link to a blog post I did on 24 hours in Berlin that shows some pictures from some of the various things there. And there's the bust of Nefertiti in the next museum over, and they're world-class museums. I think that's really what you need to know, is that this rivals in terms of acquired ancient collection, you know, the British Museum or any other museum in the world.
And also nearby is the Bode Museum, which has art. The German History Museum is also quite interesting. It can be rather sobering. It's rather extensive, but it's also quite interesting in terms of the history of Berlin or history of Germany, and obviously a lot of focus on Berlin as well. And that, all of those museums are in a relatively short, well, the history museum's outside of the Museum Island, but the others are in kind of a contained area. And when it's springtime or summertime, it's great to relax on the grass. There's lots of grass areas and parks in that region as well.
Right. Also, the Berlin Cathedral is right there.
Yes, and the Berlin Cathedral. And you can also usually find a couple times a week concerts in there as well. So that's another good way to get inside, meaning your concert ticket provides the entrance fee into the cathedral and you get a concert at the same time.
What's the area of Berlin if I haven't been there in 10 years, that has changed the most?
Mitte and Prenzlauer Berg, I would say. Maybe not 10 years, maybe more 15 years, but those were the areas that you mentioned during your first visit that were gray, and there used to be, the apartments were heated with coal and a lot of abandoned places, and now it's cookie dough shops now and
several cafes.
Sign me up.
Several cafes competing for the best avocado toast.
Okay.
Very colorful and modern, and it's changed quite a lot.
Well, Berlin is certainly known historically for its avocados, I think.
Yes, of course. It's like a warm, tropical
huge avocado growing region, isn't it? No, not so much.
But I would also say Kreuzberg and Neukölln have changed quite a lot in the last 10 years. Again, the shift from mainly worker and immigrant communities to more,
right,
say, hip communities where there's more galleries and restaurants and cafes. And those two areas, I would say, have changed probably the most.
Well, what would you skip? I'm looking at my guidebook. It's telling me to go to various places. And there's a few that if you had limited time, you would probably pass.
I would say Schloss Charlottenburg, and okay. I hope my father doesn't hear this because he was so excited to visit. It's a beautiful palace. It's been renovated, reconstructed. It's full of period piece furniture. But
right.
For me, that's really not what Berlin is about. Berlin is, for me, not so much about going inside and seeing these beautiful palaces and furniture, but it's more about the living history that's outside. So it's beautiful, but at the same time, if you have limited time, you could see something similar to that in other capital cities in Europe or other cities in Europe.
For me, it would probably be Kurfürstendamm. I'm always surprised by seeing that neighborhood appear on so many lists, or the first thing that you should do, or sort of typical Berlin, because it just doesn't really, having lived here, it doesn't strike us typical Berlin at all. It strikes
was 20 years ago.
Yeah, it had a different role, actually, 30 to 40 years ago.
That role has been displaced, and it looks quite a lot like any other shopping area in
sure.
any major city that you might see. And there's so many other things that are unique about the city, including what we've talked about so far, that it says that's probably worth a skip. You're not going to miss anything unless you have some really serious shopping that you have to do. And there are plenty of small shops in places like Kreuzberg and Prenzlauer Berg and in Neukölln that will probably take care of most of your needs.
Although the one thing I would say in Kurfürstendamm that I think is unique to Berlin would be the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church.
Yes, yes. True.
Yeah, that is a church that was damaged, destroyed during World War II. And instead of renovating it to new, they actually renovated or reconstructed it to keep the damage on the steeple. So it's a reminder of the war and the cost of war. And it has next door to it almost like a meditation chapel or a room that is very peaceful as well.
I think the new that they built, quite modern and I think beautiful. Now, that's a matter of opinion. But the contrast between the two, I think, is interesting and obviously historically significant.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Anything else we should cover before we start to do some of our wrap-up questions?
So one of the things, since we're heading into the season right now, is Christmas markets.
Sure.
And
yes.
Berlin isn't traditionally known for its Christmas markets, meaning when you think German Christmas markets, it's usually Nuremberg mm-hmm. or
sure.
Munich. But Berlin has, I think, now over 60 Christmas markets. So it's not only in one place and centralized, but they're spread throughout the city. And it's everything from the more traditional German Christmas markets with the Glühwein and the sausages and the lights and the pretty buildings around. And for that, I would recommend Gendarmenmarkt as the Gendarmenmarkt Christmas market. But then there's also lots of funky, eclectic, specialized Christmas markets around the city.
And those are usually run over the course of maybe a single weekend. So they're in and they're out.
Or they're over 4 weekends in Advent, but they're not every day.
Right.
And you mentioned the Gendarmenmarkt. So that's the place where we have the twin churches with the square in between down in the, I don't know what neighborhood that is.
Technically Mitte.
It's in Mitte. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's where we'd find traditional, you're saying.
Yeah, traditional, and it's very pretty. Traditionally decorated, it's a beautiful setting because you have the two churches around and the square and everything. And then you have one of the newer Christmas markets that's on weekends called Heise Holzmarkt, which is in this funky urban village area by the Spree River. And there it's everything from bonfires, and then they have music and eclectic puppet shows. But then you can also still get your Glühwein, and there's lots of handicrafts and homemade bread. And so it's an interesting mixture of things. There's also in Mitte in the north. So Mitte is quite big. So that's why I think of it as two different areas.
Right.
There's the Lucia market, which is a Scandinavian market.
Oh.
In the Kulturbrauerei, the culture brewery, which is the site of a former brewery there. And that's also quite fun because it's in a industrial courtyard, brick courtyard. You have your Finnish glögg and you've got your Swedish different spiced drinks and stuff. And it's also got a nice feel to it.
And the other thing you reminded me of when you said Mitte, because I've been at the Christmas market you were talking about there, that the Bebelplatz near there, the original in front of the opera, has one of the more interesting World War II era memorials, which is the memorial to a Nazi book burning.
Yes.
Really easy to overlook, literally, because it's a hole in the square that's lit with empty shelves. And that's it. It's sort of striking in its simplicity, I think.
You bring up a good point, because when you walk around Berlin, you'll find memorials everywhere.
Literally find them under your feet.
Yeah.
So you're familiar with the Stolperstein?
Or the
stumbling box?
Oh, yes.
Yes. So sometimes they don't notice them, but when they do, they're like, what are these? And we see people. We actually have one outside, installed outside of our apartment building. And what they are is a couple inches by a couple of inches, and they're brass. And they have the name of a person on there. Or several people.
Right.
And it actually tracks which camps they were in and
so
where and when they perished.
So this is by the house where they used to live.
Yeah. Correct. So the names are people who used to live in that house. And so in certain neighborhoods that used to be primarily Jewish neighborhoods, like in right. certain parts of Mitte, you'll have buildings that will have, let's say, six or seven stumbling blocks outside. Us, our building, we just have one. But as you walk around the city, you'll notice them. And some people say, well, why are they on the ground? That disrespectful. But the idea is that the more that they're rubbed, the shinier the brass becomes. So they're supposed to get your attention.
As we go to wrap this up, you're standing in the prettiest spot in Berlin. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
People might argue with me that this is not the prettiest spot in Berlin, but for me, it's my happy place.
It's all right. There's no judgment here.
The edge of Tempelhof Park.
Okay.
Looking over the park, the runways at sunset, where it's filled with people in the park, sitting on the grass, on their bicycles, and it's just a great feeling.
That was my first place. My second place would be on a very still night in the middle of the summer, sharing a couple of beers with friends on the edge of the Landwehr Canal in Kreuzberg on Maibachufer.
Having an impromptu picnic.
Excellent. And we've talked a little bit about food, and we mentioned a lot of different things. If you had two or three nights in Berlin and you wanted to go to your favorite places, where would you take people?
Ooh, so if you want traditional German food, there's Max and Moritz in Kreuzberg, their Oranienplatz. And it's an old building. They've been there forever, and they've got the gruff Berlin waiters and waitresses and, you know, several different floors. And they've got kind of good, hearty German food and that gruff Berlin atmosphere.
Okay.
Let's see. In terms of Turkish food, lots of different options there. Döner is something you're going to have to have.
A döner kebab
is something you're going to have while you're here. That's a matter of how much time you'd like to invest standing in a line on the street. Are we talking about lunch or are we talking about dinner?
Either one.
Okay, so Mustafa's Gemüse Kebab on Meringdam, that's arguably one of the best. The question is whether you want to actually spend all your time eating that one.
It usually has a long line. It's an outdoor place.
I'm actually a fan of the Döner Kebab served by Hasir, which is the original location of the invention of the Döner Kebab. And even though I'm not the biggest fan of sitting down there because I think it's a little bit touristy and the quality of food is a little bit off, I actually like their wrap-up takeaway Döner Kebab. And the one, you can get it in bread, like a quarter round of a large piece of bread. Turkish bread, or you can get it in kind of a flat tortilla like.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm more familiar with. Yeah.
For me, that's the better choice.
For if it's summertime, another place is the Prater Beer Garden. It's in the border of Mitte and Prenzlauer Berg. I don't exactly know which neighborhood it is technically, but that's an old beer garden. So lots of tables outside, and they also have a sausage and traditional German fare as well, and good beer.
Well, and the one thing we should say, and I'm not complete 100% sure in this fact here, but I believe there are more vegetarian or vegan restaurants now in Berlin than there are in Los Angeles. So that's a huge change from how it used to be, that basically German restaurants 20 years ago, in even in Berlin, used to be, do you want meat with your meat?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, the last few years, there's been a rise in vegetarian restaurants in general, but especially vegan restaurants. And if you have listeners who are vegan, there's a website called Green Me Berlin, and they have a map there that highlights the best vegan restaurants in Berlin. And they also run sustainability and social enterprises tour.
Interesting. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Berlin.
The fact that they haven't opened a new airport in 9 years.
Have a laugh in a good way.
The endearing gruffness of Berliners at times. There's kind of a joke when you try and buy tickets on a bus or you're in a traditional restaurant and try and place an order. There's a charming gruffness that you kind of laugh at in Berlin.
Yeah, they call it the Berliner Schnauz. Is that right? Yeah. So it's an attitude that people here, particularly of the sort of older set, feel like they have to give you so that you can have the real true Berlin experience.
Another thought that just came to mind is the fact that Berlin has no open container law. So you can just go into a shop, buy a beer, and walk down the street and drink it, and it's perfectly legal. And it still sometimes surprises me, like, wait, I can do this? And it's allowed?
You're familiar with the Spätkauf concept, right?
No.
Oh, okay. Can we steer back to this? Sure. So Spätkauf means late buy, and it's basically a convenience store, more or less. And it's actually a nice way to go and buy a beer that you can carry on the street. And actually,
which is a Strassenbier.
A street beer.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
They have official names for this.
And many of them even have tables outside. So it's a pretty easy, inexpensive, low friction way to enjoy a beer as you're walking down the street.
And you can take them to parks and enjoy them in the parks. And technically, you're not allowed to drink in the U-Bahn, but it used to be that you could also enjoy them in the U-Bahn.
Got it. And if we had to summarize Berlin in just three words each, what three words would you use? As a marital, you know, happiness here, we'll give you each three words.
I'm going to go with always in Renaissance.
Okay.
The thing that attracts people to Berlin, keeps people like us living here for as long as we have, is that it's in a constant cycle or state of rebirth and redefining itself and sort of feeling in its own darkness. It's reimagining itself.
So I'm going to try and stick with three words.
He said three words. He just then gave us an explanation.
Creative, change, and entrepreneurial.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't talked about that, but that's definitely where a lot of new things are happening in Germany, is in the Berlin scene.
Yeah. And one of the reasons for that is something you mentioned earlier. Berlin is still inexpensive compared to other major cities in Germany and other cities in Europe. So it provides a bit of room to experiment and take some risks.
Excellent. Our guests again have been Audrey Scott and Daniel Knoll from uncorneredmarket.com. And if we wanted to send people to the best post on Uncornered Market about Berlin, where are we going to send them?
We actually have a Berlin beginner's guide, which goes over our favorite neighborhoods and a lot of the things that we touched on today.
Yeah, and there's actually a couple of neighborhoods that we would like to have touched on that are actually in that guide, definitely worth checking out.
Excellent. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well as the lyrics of this episode. Audrey and Daniel, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Berlin.
Thanks for having us.
In news of the community, I heard from Justin about the episode we did recently on the Canary Islands. I really enjoyed hearing about the Canaries again. We visited a few months ago on a cruise and jammed as much as possible into a day on each island. I echo the sentiment that the Canaries resemble nowhere else on the planet, with the possible exception of Hawaii. I have to say I really enjoyed all the variety of landscapes and flora in such a small space. I wanted to note a couple of items that didn't make the podcast, such as all the Caesar Marenque-designed locations around the islands, including quite a few on Lanzarote. Mirador del Rio on Lanzarote, Maspalomas and Sand Dunes on Gran Canaria, Cueva de Viento, giant lava tube on Tenerife, and the Puerto de la Cruz Botanical Gardens, items from around the world from explorer times, now several hundred years old. And then Justin also kept a log of his trip, and I'll put a link to his pictures and videos in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.